You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. Ladies and gentlemen, the title of this message, is Secret Teachings and Facts, to put it in an Irish sort of way. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're back again this week, and I asked Yahweh, as I was praying for all the radio shows this morning, that they would go well, and they did. I was praying that he'd give me a scripture. It happens to be one that I have never read before, but boy, we struck gold. It comes from the book of Habakkuk, and it's from the first chapter, and it's called Habakkuk's Complaint. How long, Yahweh, must I call for help, but you do not listen, or cry out to you violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife, and conflict abounds. Therefore the law is paralyzed, and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous, so that justice is perverted. Ladies and gentlemen, there's tears in my eyes. I don't mean to do that, but is that not where we are today? Is this not the position that we are in today? We wonder how long we must call him before he fixes the situation, yet we are the cause of it. We're crying out to him about the violence that is occurring in all of our nations, but we do not see him moving. I mean, I couldn't say this any better. Why do we have to look at injustice? It's very ugly. Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? It is a question, a good question, but yet I've learned not to question Yahweh about these things. However, that doesn't mean I don't feel that these things don't run through my mind. Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. When you make cultures live together that don't wish to live together, then violence will be before you. And there is strife, and there will be much conflict, because it is against not only Yahweh's laws, but the laws, the very laws of nature themselves, which Yahweh has instituted. The law is paralyzed in our lands, right? Look at Patrick Cullinane. He has these same questions. And justice never prevails. This woman from the IRS, Lois Lerner or whatever her name is a liar. And she got promoted. And she's not going to be prosecuted. Therefore, justice will not prevail. And it says the wicked hem in the righteous, so that justice is perverted. And ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, justice is perverted. when the devil and his children have control over the law system, it can be nothing but corruption and perversion. It can be nothing else when you have a parasite in your nation. There can be nothing but destruction and violence, nothing but strife and conflict. And the host becomes paralyzed. Yes. So Habakkuk's complaint is a very good one and very apropos, as they say. And then Yahweh gives his answer. Look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed. For I am going to do something in your days that you would not believe even if you were told. I am raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings not their own. Ladies and gentlemen, this is just absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning what you're hearing right here. They are a feared and dreaded people. They are a law to themselves and promote their own honor. Their horses are swifter than leopards, fiercer than wolves at dusk. Their cavalry gallops headlong. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle, swooping to devour. And they all come intent on violence. Their hordes advance like a desert wind and gather prisoners like sand. They mock kings and scoff at rulers. They laugh at all fortified cities. By building earthen ramps, they capture them. Then they sweep past like wind and go on, guilty people whose own strength is their god. Now, this answer is very incredible. Who are the Babylonians of today? Who is Mother Babylon? But the Jews, with their Babylonian money system? Who are the ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings that are not their own? But the Jews? Who else can that be? Now, I don't know who it was, and, you know, I'm sure this has meaning in Habakkuk's time, but it also rings true in our time at this moment, at this very moment. The only ruthless and impetuous people I know are people that would murder and murder and murder as these people, these Edomite, Canaanite, Hittite Jews, Khazarian Jews have done. But the problem is that Yahweh is raising them up. I am raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people, who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings not of their own. Now, the Jews are doing this in Germany these days, and in all the white countries of the world, the Anglo-Saxon Israelite countries of the world. There are German people being kicked out of their homes, and their homes are being given to other people. Their homes, their dwellings, are being given to people that are not theirs. They are a feared and dreaded people. Well, yes, people in the New Testament and the Old Testament would not do this and would not do that for fear of the Jews. They are a law to themselves. Yes, they write laws every day, Talmudic laws that are not the laws of Yahweh. and they promote their own honor. They love to give themselves awards and gifts. As far as their horses being swifter than leopards, we can certainly see, and the cavalry and all that, this is our militaries that they use as mercenaries. Their cavalry gallops headlong. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swooping to devour. The word for eagle in Hebrew is nesher, which is very interesting. They all come intent on violence. Their hordes advance like a desert wind and gather prisoners like sand. They mock kings and scoff at rulers. Why do they mock kings and scoff at rulers? Because they have the central bank control mechanism. And I know it's a repetition, but give me control over a nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws. In other words, I don't care about kings. I don't care about rulers. I don't care about congresses. I don't care about anybody. Because as long as I have control over a nation's currency, I run the kings and the rulers. They laugh at all fortified cities. By building earthen ramps, they capture them. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd say I got what I asked for. What do you think about that? How does that hit you? How does it strike you? See, the reason why I would say that we shouldn't question Yahweh is because the potter, you know, you don't question, the pot doesn't question the potter, you know, and so on and so forth. And I had done this to Yahweh, and he taught me some serious lessons. He taught me not to do that, because that's disrespectful, in a sense. It just depends on what kind of questions you're asking. Okay, so we're going to continue on here with Eustace Mullins. We're going to finish off where we left off last week. We'll start there and finish it off. And then I've got some very nice facts for you. So we continue on here. He had talked about how Urban calls attention to genocide in its Israeli edition, referring to the continued massacres of Arab women and children under the direction of fanatical Zionists in notorious Rosh Hashanah massacre, a religious celebration which served the dual purpose of Jewish ritual murder and the political goals of the world's most famous terrorist, Prime Minister Menachem Begin, who desires to murder every Arab man, woman, and child in the territories which the Jews plan to annex and settle in the Middle East. Urban brings up a vital point in referring to the well-known genocidal practices of the Israeli government, suggesting that the Jews are now delighting in mass murder as a compensation for the myth that they quietly went into their deaths in the notorious Holocaust fantasy without resisting their Nazi killers. The idea that the heretofore passive Jews are, for the first time in their history, learning to kill, belies the entire recorded history of this plague. There are too many well-documented massacres in history in which the Jews tortured and murdered their victims with the greatest glee, gloating in such barbaric practices of tearing out the hearts of women and children and smearing the blood on their faces, while the Jewish women ripped out the writhing entrails of their dying victims and wrapped the steaming evidences of their victory around their waists, and began the traditional Jewish dance of the Hatkavah as the celebration of their triumph over their vanquished foes. Who are their foes, ladies and gentlemen? You and I, the Caucasian race. That's who their foes are. Now, I wanted to clarify a couple of things here. I've heard it talked about twice today, and I wanted to correct it. It was right up until the point it was talking about where the word kite comes from. Yes, the Jews did not want to sign with an X because it reminded them of the cross. That's why they didn't want to sign with an X. They said it was offensive to them. See, you Judeo-Christians believe that they are God's chosen people, but everything to do with Yahweh in the flesh or Yahweh is offensive to these people. What Jesus did on the cross is offensive to these people. When will you get that through your heads? So they decided they would sign with a circle. And no, we're not playing tic-tac-toe here, ladies and gentlemen. The reason they signed with a circle is because the circle represents the Ouroboros snake. These are the people of the snake. They have always been identified throughout all the ages as the people of the snake, the serpent people, because their father was the serpent in the garden. So circle, in their crazy little hybrid language for hybrid people like themselves, the word kike or kikel or kikela was the word for circle. It eventually ended up kike. I believe it's kikel is the first definition of it, and that's their Yiddish language, and it means circle. But circle also means infinity. But when I talk about the Ouroboros snake, I talk about the snake that's biting its own tail. Death into life, life into death, death into life, life into death. The circle. The circular snake that is wrapped around Europe all the way into America, all into Australia. It's wrapped around all of us, and it's biting its own tail. That's why they wanted to sign by the circle, because they are the serpent people, the people of the serpent. Admittedly, we are their foes. We have always been their foes, and every chance they ever have got to kill us, they have taken it. These are people that smile to win, but will turn on you in a heartbeat. They'll be in your nation. And if an enemy would come to attack you, they would open the gates for that enemy to get in, so that enemy could destroy you. And then they would say, "See, we opened the gates from you." And then they would endear themselves with smiles and friendship with the coming people, so that they would already be in position to do the same thing to them next. This, you've ever heard the term the vicious circle? This is what they're all about. Their existence is a vicious circle. A circle with no end until Yahweh brings it to an end with his Holocaust. that they so richly deserve. They are a plague. I told you it's like a biological experiment. If we are the white blood cells in the body, these cancerous cells, these parasitic destroyers come in and make the blood unhealthy. They attack the white blood cells. The body needs many white blood cells to be healthy. And then they get their other cancerous cells, meaning the other families of the earth that they've always used for their purposes, to come and attack the white blood cells too. And pretty soon, the body is unhealthy. That's what the world is today. The more whites you kill, ladies and gentlemen, the less healthy this world is going to be. I can imagine that there's some people laughing out there. You think that's funny, don't you? But the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. There's 2/3 less white people now on the earth. Is the earth a better place today than it was 200 years ago? Answer that one. Go ahead. Answer that one. So he goes on. The book of Esther records one of many such massacres of their victims by the Jews. Esther, where the king granted the Jews, which were in every city, to gather themselves together and to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish. Now, the book of Esther, according to Bertrand L. Comperé, doesn't even belong in the Bible because the name of Yahweh is never mentioned in this particular book, as far as I've ever seen. And that's what he said. And I trust Bertrand L. Comperé to a point. I mean, I trust every man to a point, but I trust Yahweh all the way. So, wherein the king granted the Jews, which were in every city, to gather themselves together and to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, both little ones and women, and to take the spoil of them for their prey. Thus a Jewish prostitute employed her power over the king to demand that he allow the Jews to massacre both little ones and children, not merely in one town, but throughout the kingdom, because the Jews, which were in every city, just as they are today. This biblical story records the first instance of total war, in which women and children were to be slain, as opposed to the traditional military combat in which professional soldiers trained for this role met on the battlefield to vie against each other and to win or lose honorably in the field. The Jews, as their million-dollar-a-week apologists, Pat Robertson and Reverend Jerry Falwell, go to great pains to explain to us, did not have to fight on the battlefield to win territory because God had promised them the earth, and this sacred promise is the only law in the world today. It is to be hoped that at some point Falwell and Robertson will show us the actual documents on which this historic deed was recorded. To date, they ignore all questions about any proof of their fantastic claims on the behalf of the Jews, and millions keep rolling in. Despite the flagrant efforts of Falwell and Robertson on behalf of the Jewish World Murder Plan, the record shows that The Jew prefers to avoid the battlefield and the hazards of face-to-face combat. That's because they're cowards, ladies and gentlemen. The Jews have always been known as cowards since day one. Cowards. They were the kind of people that stayed back when it came to fighting in the war. I have said this on my show before. They would stay to the back where the least danger was. And some of them would actually kill people in their own, on their own side, and then run back. See, they would be the first back to the city after the so-called battle. They are cowardly. They act cowardly. They always have been cowards. And today, even now, they are cowards. So they don't like face-to-face combat, and to stealthily set up the massacres of helpless women and children, such has been their history. And today, we have even seen it on live on color television. It was the ingrained bloodthirstiness of the Jews which led them to select as their principal religious holiday the Feast of Purim, which celebrates their massacre of the innocents. Esther chapter 8:17. And in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. And many of the people of the land became Jews, for fear of the Jews fell upon them. Now, I'm going to stop right here because there's something within this story, and this is true. When you go into these Jewish-owned businesses and you're going out, they always tell you to have a good day. Now, you take that any way you want it, but I know what they mean by that. Listen again. And in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. And many of the people of the land became Jews, for fear of the Jews fell upon them. See what I'm saying? This is a good day when you kill women and children. So have a good day. In other words, you'll be next. Have a good day. One of the most striking parts of this well-known quotation from the book of Esther, the only genuine Jewish book of the Bible, and for that reason, the only one in which God is not mentioned, there you go, is the revelation that the code word of the Jews to indicate their knowledge of the Jewish world murder plan is their remembrance of their massacre of the innocents by the code phrase, had a good day. Since that massacre, Jews have always offered this recognition phrase to each other. In Yiddish, or whatsoever language of the particular nation which they plan to take over by saying, have a good day, meaning, of course, we're looking forward to more massacres of the women and children of the Goyim or the Gentile cattle. Now that the Jews have attained such enormous economic and political power in the United States, they have instructed all their Gentile employees in the vast networks of retail grocery, drug and apparel stores, which they own throughout the United States, that they must greet each customer by saying, have a good day. Sorry, I haven't read this in a long time, so I remembered that, though, so it shows I have a good capacity to memorize certain things, important things. This apparently friendly and supposedly meaningless salutation lets the Jew in the know be tipped off that he is in a store owned by the Jews, and that the owners are anticipating having a good day in the future by more slaughters of the innocent and helpless Gentile women and children. Now, one thing I will point out here that you should realize about the Jews. We were commanded to kill them. King Saul was commanded to kill them. This is where he went wrong. He didn't kill some of them, and he put them under tribute. John Hyrcanus did the same thing. We were too merciful to them, you see. We were told not to show mercy to these Jews, that we were to kill their women and children and them and wipe them off the face of the earth, because Yahweh knew what would happen in the future to us. That's why we're here today. That's why we're in the situation we are in today, because we did not listen to Yahweh. You say to yourself, what a cruel God. But you don't have any problem with these Jews killing off children, do you? You don't have any problem with these Jews killing off the white children, do you? You don't have any problem with them killing the women and children of our race, but you have a problem with Yahweh when he tells us to kill them to save your arses. Why is that? How come you don't mind your own race being massacred by these pigs? But when Yahweh tells us to do that to them to save us from the future troubles, because he knows what's going to come upon us and what has come upon us, ladies and gentlemen, the very thing he was trying to prevent by telling us to kill them. But we are a merciful people. And we didn't kill them, and that's my point. We had mercy. It's just something within us. We are a merciful people. But now put the glove on the other hand. They were not merciful to us, were they? And time and time and time and time and time and time again, they were not merciful to us. Why is that? You have no problem with that, though, right? You don't mind that they've killed 2/3 of our race in the last 100 years? You know what I'm saying? You don't have any problem with that. But you have a problem with Yahweh telling us to kill this. Don't you find that interesting? Don't you find that interesting that you don't mind your own race being slaughtered by these pigs? And you'll stand up and stand up for them? And you'll worship these Jews? These money lenders? These child murder ritual sacrifice people? These people that have done damage to our race year after year after year after year after decade after all through time, ever since they've been let out of the ghetto, it has just been hands down, no bars hold. Now listen to this scripture. Eli sent it to me. And it is Numbers 33:55. Thank you, Eli. But if ye will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those which ye let remain of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and shall vex you in the land wherein ye dwell. Well, was Yahweh right? Is he ever wrong? Have you ever seen Yahweh to be wrong? No, and you never, never, ever will. I have to be a little stern right now, because you people got to get it through your head that you're having mercy to the wrong people. They will not have mercy on you, and they have had no mercy upon you. We are at war. There is no party in America anymore. I've told you this over and over again. The party is over. We are at war. I can't be the first one to have told you this. Let me read this again now. But if you will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those which ye let remain of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and shall vex you in the land wherein ye dwell. Are these Jews vexing us in America today? Oh, yes, they are. I challenge you to show me one good Jew. And I also challenge you to tell me one good thing the Jews have done for our nation. Or any of the Caucasian nations. I know that you can't answer those two questions because there is no such thing as a good Jew. And as I have coined this phrase, another of my phrases that I've coined just in one of my recent articles, even a dead Jew is not a good Jew. I said that nice and close so you could get it right into you. So let's continue on. Thank you, Eli. The most important statement in the book of Esther is the warning that the fear of the Jews fell upon them. Today, the dark shadow of imminent tragedy looms over every Christian because of their fear of the Jews and because of their instinctive knowledge, like penned cattle in the slaughterhouse, that the Jew intends to kill them for his profit. Jacob Timmerman, in an enlightening series of articles in the New Yorker magazine, 1982, said, "To understand the existence of the other and then admit his existence without hatred is something new for Israel as a whole. The other, of course, means the non-Jew, a person whom the Jew cannot see without hatred. Because of his savage nature, the Jew wishes only to kill him and drink his blood. It is this terrible desire which bars the Jew from peaceful existence in any civilized nation, and which has been solely responsible for the occasional but ineffective resistance which the intended Christian victims have offered in opposition to his murder plans. Remember, Jew, what I said to you, the blood will cry. The blood will cry. Remember, Abel's blood was crying out to Yahweh. And I'm going to remind you, Jews, this over and over again. As you drink that blood within you is crying to Yahweh. You better fear that, because if I were you, I wouldn't be drinking that blood anymore. Even if it meant that it would make you healthy. Because that blood is crying out to Yahweh. It will torment you. It will put you in fear. It will cause you to have no peace." You know, one thing that was very interesting is that I found out, because the Jews are so race mixed, all of them, to one degree or another, I was reading this book called... I'm trying to think of it. Anyway, what it said is they have skin diseases. And I know this to be true. And they said even the rich Jews have skin diseases and they have to hide it. They also said all Jews smell very bad. And that's another reason. I remember Pastor Dan talking about the smells of the different races and how they have covered it up with these deodorants and perfumes. See, there's more than one reason for these deodorant and perfumes. I would think that if we had our natural smell, our women would be more attracted to us as white men. But if everybody has the same smell, this would cause there to be no problem in that area. Therefore, the race mixing could be easier to swallow, so to speak. So by us having these perfumes and all these things, it actually has caused our women to not be as attracted to us as they would be. Just something to think about. I thought that was very wise. And it just so happens to be in this book that I'm reading. The Original Mr. Jacob, it's called. Absolutely remarkable what I've read in this book so far. And I will share it with you in the near future. I can't share the whole book, but it will blow you away. I've only read 51 pages of it so far, and it will blow you away. The Jew has only one purpose in the Middle East, and that is to murder all of the Arab inhabitants and to take their lands. You see, that's another reason. See, there's many reasons why they're bringing these people into our lands. If they get them out of their lands, it's easier to take their lands from them. Obviously, you can see they want Africa as well, because they're trying to get those people out of their lands as well. See, it's always multi-purposed, but there's always money at the end of the line. Money. There's just like the Holocaust story, money is at the end of the line, yet there's many purposes to this so-called Holocaust story. The great scholar Dr. Eric Bischoff discovered this revelation in the official Jewish text of the Tikkun Zohar, edition Birtwitz 88b. A book which, like all Jewish religious texts, is actually a code of Kabbalistic rituals detailing the instructions on how to murder the Gentiles. Furthermore, says the Tikkun Zohar, there is a commandment pertaining to the killing of strangers who are like beasts. This killing has to be done in the lawful Jewish method. Those who do not bid themselves to the Jewish religious law must be offered up as sacrifices to the high God. The high God is not Yahweh. The high God to them is Lucifer, Halel. From the historian's point of view, the Jewish world war against all Christians proceeds in an unbroken succession of events from ancient history. When Jewish prostitutes such as Esther persuaded rulers to destroy their own people at the whim of the Jews. In 1773, Meyer Anselm Rothschild met with 12 leading Jews to plot the downfall of the emerging Christian nations in both the New World and the Old World. During the American struggle for independence, Rothschild found his fortune on money received by the Elector of Hesse in payment for the mercenaries whom he rented to the British in their attempt to crush the American colonists. See, what had happened was Rothschild, he worked it out that the Hessian soldiers came over here to fight against us. I think this was the War of 1812. I'm not sure. It could be the actual with George Washington, but it could be the War of 1812. However, what happened was that the Duke of Hesse, he died after he gave his money to Rothschild to invest for him, or he was the Elector of Hesse. And so then he stole his monies as well. You remember when I told you about a lawsuit that we need to put against these Jews? There is a much bigger lawsuit that should be carried out immediately by Vladimir Putin. And that is that these Jews, in their so-called legitimate businesses, stole about $50 billion from the Tsar that they killed in 1917, Tsar Nicholas. When they killed him and his family, they stole all of his money. He was the richest man in the world. Therefore, there is a lawsuit. He had money all over the world in banks, millions of dollars in all over the world in banks. And these collaborators, of course, you know, there's nobody that's ever conspired to do anything evil except Al-Qaeda, as far as these Jews tell us. There's never been anybody that conspired against man or God, but that's BS, of course. You see, they conspired against the Tsar. They killed him and his family, and they knew that they had his money in all of their banks around the world. So they collectively stole all that money. Now, that money has gathered interest. It could be to the tune of $60 to $70 billion or more by now. So Vladimir Putin should go after that money with a lawsuit. That money should be recovered. After all, if 1% of the people have half of the world's wealth, then we know where that wealth was gotten from. And that wealth should be recovered to the Russian people, because that is not the Jews' money. They stole that money. They should be prosecuted. Citibank, all the banks, Rothschild included. I'm telling you, countries of the world, it's time for you to put these lawsuits on these Jews. It's time to get your money back for all that usury. But they funded the wars and caused destruction of properties in your countries. And then they stole these properties at pennies to the dollar. And on and on and on it goes. It's time to put lawsuits against these people and get that wealth back. Get that property back. To take away the wealth from these filthy, rotten Jews who are at war with the Caucasian race, which is the true Israelites, which are the true Israelites from the Bible, the true seed of Jacob. It is time, it has been time, and one should enact upon this now. You will, these Jews will run for the hills. Ladies and gentlemen, they're going to be anyway soon. They said never again, but they are going to be ejected from Europe, and they will run from America as well. Never again, huh? Don't try to taunt Yahweh with sayings like that. Never say never to Yahweh. Because it's going to happen again, and it's in the process of happening right now. It's just beginning. The hounds are on your trail, Jews. The blood is crying out from within you. You want to change the names of everything? Because it hurts feelings? Well, we don't care about your feelings. I never did care about your feelings, and I never will care about your feelings. That's all you try to do is work on feelings. That's how the whole world is sent this way and that way and this way and that way with feelings. I don't want any more of your feelings. Why don't you drink them? Instead of the blood, which is crying to Yahweh from within you. You're not good enough to have blood that good. You are tainted. You are tainted meat. You are corruption, utterly corrupted. You are dead living things. That's what the Bible really says about you, that you're dead living things, utterly corrupt. Just like vampires are. I knew you were telling the truth. Through those stories. Maybe all of us should wear garlic around our necks. That'll keep the Jew away from you, if not the stare into their eyes from you to them. That keeps them away from you too. They're afraid of that. From the historian's point of view, the Jewish world war against all Christians proceeds in an unbroken succession of events from ancient history. When Jewish prostitutes such as Esther persuaded rulers to destroy their own people at the whim of the Jews. Okay, I already just said this one, but let me go on. Okay, the War of 1812 was instigated by the Rothschilds to force the renewal of the charter for the Bank of the United States. Yes, that was Jefferson. I think it was Jefferson didn't want that, and he would not agree to sign that. Well, was it? He says Andrew Jackson here. Yeah, that's too early for. Oh no, Andrew Jackson's the one that did it later. That's my favorite president, ladies and gentlemen. Andrew Jackson was the only one to have ever balanced the budget. He paid off the debt of the nation completely. So let me go back. The War of 1812 was instigated by the Rothschilds to force the renewal of their charter for the Bank of the United States. That was done by Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson. When this charter was vetoed by President Andrew Jackson in 1836, the Jews precipitated a financial panic and set up their plan to bring about the Civil War, which would simultaneously destroy the American Republic and despoil the wealthy Christian families of the South. See, that's why I say that the wrong side won the war, the Civil War, the uncivil war. Even the Stooges have an episode, and it's called Uncivil Warriors. You don't think about it, but that's exactly what it was. The wrong side won. The Communist Manifesto of 1848 set Europe ablaze with revolutions, wars, and counter-revolutions. In August 1903, Max Nordau, in his address to the 6th Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland, revealed the plan for even greater conflagrations, the coming world wars. Let me tell you the following words as if I were showing you the rungs of a ladder leading upward and upward. The Zionist Congress, the English-Uganda proposition, the future world war, the peace conference where, with the help of England, a free and Jewish Palestine will be created. Onward and upward, over the bodies of 50 million more dead Christians, this was Max Nordau's ecstatic vision of the coming world war, and so it came to pass. Professional historians have never been able to offer a satisfactory explanation of how the European nations became embroiled in the First World War. Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated by Gavril Princeps at Sarajevo, I think it is. Austria demanded an apology from Serbia. Serbia apologized, but Austria inexplicably declared war anyway. Three Jewish advisors to Kaiser Wilhelm, Chancellor Bethlen Hollweg, Max Warburg, and Albert Ballin, then had the Kaiser declare war, and other nations were involved. Why? To carry out the Jewish plan. By the way, Kaiser Wilhelm had to ask Rothschild's permission in order to go to war. And that's probably why these three filthy frogs, or whatever you want to call them, had to go and see the Kaiser. On February 8th, 1920, Sir Winston Churchill expressed his alarm over world developments in an interview published in the Sunday Illustrated Herald, London. From the days of Adam, Spartacus Weishaupt, Spartacus was Weishaupt's code name, to those of Karl Marx, to those of Trotsky, Bella Kuhn, Rosa Luxemburg, and Emma Goldman, this worldwide conspiracy for the overthrow of civilization and for the reconstruction of society on the basis of arrested development, of envious malevolence, and impossible equality has been steadily growing. There is no need to exaggerate the part played in the creation of Bolshevism and in the actual bringing about of the Russian Revolution by these international and, for the most part, atheistic Jews. It is certainly a very great one. It probably outweighs all others. With the notable exception of Lenin, the majority of the leading figures are Jews. Moreover, the principal inspiration and driving power comes from the Jewish leaders. I will say one thing about Lenin, though. I saw Yahweh's judgment upon him. And boy, it was ugly. And I mean ugly. He went to the Dr. Pavlov, as I have told you in an earlier show, and he wanted Dr. Pavlov to train the Russian people in the same way as he was training Pavlov's dog, because he believed that they were no better than cattle. See, Lenin might not be a Jew. I think he was half Jewish, though. But he thought like a Jew. He walked like a Jew, and he quacked like a Jew. And so it came to the point where he was having crazy migraine headaches, and his skin started turning black. He ended up in a wheelchair. This is just a small wave of justice upon this man. This man deserved much lengthier death than he had. However, it's one of the times where I've finally seen somebody. Yahweh must have not liked him too much, because he gave it to him but good. Churchill referred, of course, to the overthrow of the Christian Orthodox Church in Russia and its replacement by a hateful gang of homicidal maniacs, whose unimaginable success was accomplished by the astute financial aid of Jacob Schiff. He was in America, Jacob Schiff. $20 million he sent to these Jewish revolutionaries. Now, I want to make a point here. You see how the overthrow of the Christian Orthodox Church in Russia was done by these Jews? Well, in case you don't know it, the Germans, who were welcomed in Russia, reinstituted all of these churches. They went into Russia with Gott mit uns on their belt buckles, which means God with us. They reinstituted the churches, whereas these filthy Jews closed these churches and were replaced with hateful gang of homicidal maniacs, whose unimaginable success was accomplished by the astute financial aid of Jacob Schiff and to the Jewish revolutionaries, and by Max Warburg in Germany, who, at the crucial moment of the revolution in Russia, arranged for Lenin to be transported through Germany to Russia in a sealed train to lead the conspirators to their Bolshevik triumph. Now, what that triumph is to bring down the Tsar and steal his money and then destroy the Russian nation, destroy Christianity, destroy the small farms, etc., etc., just like they've done in our country here. So you can see Max Warburg, of course, is a Jew, just in case. Not just because he was in Germany doesn't mean he wasn't that he was a German. He was a Jew. See, Lord Churchill was only too happy to perform a large-scale blood sacrifice at Gallipoli, using British soldiers as offering. So there is enough to worry about on his own plate. Had England not fomented and started that war, there would have been no reason for the German high command to revolutionize and send Lenin and financing to Russia. The orgy of murder, torture, and pillage which followed the Jewish triumph in Russia has never been equaled in the history of the world. You know, I was listening to this fellow who's on, the liberal radio there, the public radio, National Public Radio or whatever it is. And he said that this Russian Revolution was carried about without even any blood spilled at all. He said that there was no gunfire, no... I would have loved to just grab him by the neck and bang his head off the wall a few times for lying that way. Do you hear what it said right here? The orgy of murder, torture, and pillage which followed the Jewish triumph in Russia has never been equaled in the history of the world. For more than 1,000 years, the White Russians, descendants of German settlers in Russia, had provided an economic climate in which Russia, the breadbasket of Europe, had prospered. In a few days, this stable civilization vanished, perhaps never to return. The fortunate ones were those who recognized the peril in time to flee with nothing but the clothes on their backs. Those who dallied or sought to save others were shot down in mass executions, persisting through the night. The constant rattle of machine guns, muffled by the roar of truck engines, raced at full throttle to drown the sound of the shots and screams of the dying. Had you experienced the high standard of living in feudal Russia, perhaps, you would have had a different opinion of this alleged propriety. Propriety. Interesting. I don't know what that word is. On March 13, 1917, Jacob Schiff sent Milikov, new Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Bolshevik Revolutionary Government, and a personal friend of Schiff, a telegram reproduced in the New York Times, April 10, 1917. Allow me, as the irreconcilable enemy of the tyrannical autocratic government, say that 10 times fast, which pitilessly persecuted our co-religionaires, to congratulate through your intermission the Russian people for what they have so brilliantly accomplished, and to wish success to your comrades in government and to yourself. The issue also reproduces Milyukov's enthusiastic reply. We are one with you in our hatred and antipathy for the old regime, which is overthrown. See, I will tell you one of the reasons for this hate was about 100 years previously, I believe it was the Congress of Vienna. And this is where the Tsar torpedoed the idea of the League of Nations that Rothschild wanted to bring in. So, Rothschild swore that he would get the Tsar and his family. And though he didn't get the Tsar of that time, he got his family. And that's what it's all about. So, the Tsar only abdicated on March 15th. The Bolsheviks did not come into power until November. And Milyukov had no part in their government, but was running as fast as he could. The key word here is hatred. The Jews were free to indulge their most fervent fantasies of mass murder of helpless victims. Christians were dragged from their beds, tortured, and killed. Some were actually sliced to pieces bit by bit, while others were branded with hot irons, their eyes poked out to induce unbearable pain. Others were placed in boxes with only their heads, hands, and legs sticking out. Then hungry rats were placed in the boxes to gnaw upon their bodies. Some were nailed to the ceiling by their fingers or by their feet and left hanging until they died of exhaustion. Others were chained to the floor and hot lead poured into their mouths. Many were tied to horses and dragged through the streets of the city while the mob attacked them with rocks and kicked them to death. Hello! Does that sound merciful to you? This is the Jew, ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking of. This is what the Jews think of Christians. You Christians who worship these filthy murderers. You Christians who think they're God's chosen people and that Jesus was a Jew. You sucked up all their lies. You better find out if Jesus was a Jew, because he was no Jew. And if you call him that, that's an abomination. The Jew is an abomination. You see, we had mercy on them. They have no mercy on us. Think about all those things I just read right there. Mothers were taken to public square and their babies snatched from their arms. A red terrorist would take a baby, hold it by the head, head downward, and demand that the Christian mother deny Christ. If she would not, he tossed the baby into the air while another member of the mob rushed forward to catch it on the tip of his bayonet. Now this, you see, I'm proving to you over and over and over that these Jews accuse other people of what they are guilty of. They claim that this is what the Germans were doing in World War I. Let me read it again. This is what they claim the Germans did, but they're the ones that have done this. The Germans wouldn't do something like this. If she would not, he tossed the baby into the air while another member of the mob rushed forward to catch it on the tip of his bayonet. Pregnant Christian women were chained to trees and their babies cut out of their bodies. There were many places of public execution in Russia during the days of the revolution, one of which was described by the American Rohrbach Commission, Defender magazine, October 1933. I remember this. This is unbelievable. Listen up now. Listen up. The whole cement floor of the execution hall of the Jewish Cheka of Kiev was flooded with blood. It formed a level of several inches. It was a horrible mixture of blood, brains, and pieces of skull. All the walls was besmattered with blood. Pieces of brains and of scalps were sticking to them. A gutter of 25 centimeters wide and 25 centimeters deep and about 10 meters long was along its length full to the top with blood. Some bodies were disemboweled. Others had limbs chopped off. Some were literally hacked to pieces. Some had their eyes put out of their head. Face and neck and trunk were covered with deep wounds. Further on, we found a corpse with a wedge driven into its chest. Some had no tongues. In a corner, we discovered a quantity of dismembered arms and legs belonging to no bodies that we could locate. We already know of the glee with which Jacob Schiff and other Jewish bankers greeted the news that their co-religionaries in Russia were now engaged in the favorite Jewish practice of mass murder. But what of American government officials who were well informed by a number of intelligence sources about these atrocities? What about them? We have at least one record of a public response by a prominent government official, Woodrow Wilson, President of the United States, on April 2, 1917. Wilson, after learning of these atrocities, went before the Congress of the United States and said, "The autocracy that crowned the summit of her, Russia's, political structure, long as it had stood and terrible as was the reality of its power, was not in fact Russian in origin, character, or purpose. And now it has been shaken off. The great, generous Russian people have been added in all their naive majesty and might to the forces that are fighting for freedom in the world, for justice and for peace. Here is a fit partner for a League of Honor. Unbelievable, man. I'm telling you, Woodrow Wilson, he is underestimated as one of the most filthy, filthy people of all time. He not only funded those Jews with American money every winter to help them get through the winter, but he's the one that they wanted to get in to put in the Federal Reserve Act, the IRS Act, and that same year, the ADL was created. This filthy, filthy, rotten murderer. May he rot in hell, and may he be holocausted with the rest of the Jews. Wilson's goofy reference to the non-Russian nature of the Tsar's government referred to the fact that the Tsars were descendants of Germans who had settled in Russia 1,000 years earlier. The oldest dynasty in Europe, the Russian aristocracy, was denounced by the communist propagandist Wilson as being non-Russian. One wonders how Wilson would have described his own origins. A president of the United States whose family had been in the United States less than 100 years and whose racial and geographical origins remain a matter of considerable speculation. Wilson apparently believed that the 1,000 years the Romanovs had lived in Russia did not qualify them. The Romanovs being the Tsar's name. Now, I want you to realize something here, too. If the Russians are Germans, that means they are of the tribe of Judah. And we can see over and over how bad these Jews want to kill the tribe of Judah. We see it in Germany. We see it in Russia. We see it with the Boers in South Africa. And you mark my words. Given the chance, they will do it here in America because America has a lot of German people here. They're just waiting for the opportunity to do that here. We were told that hundreds of agitators had followed in the trail of Trotsky. Bronstein is his name. These were men having come over from the Lower East Side of New York. Some of them, when they had learned I was an American pastor in Petrograd, stepped up to me and seemed very much pleased that there was somebody who could speak English, and their broken English showed that they had not qualified as being real Americans. A number of these men called on me and were impressed with the strange Yiddish element in this thing right from the beginning, and it soon became evident that more than half of the agitators in the so-called Bolshevik movement were Jews. I have a firm conviction that this thing is Yiddish and that one of its bases is found in the east side of New York. The latest startling, you hear that, Muslims? The east side of New York. If you're looking for some Jews, you can start over in the east side of New York, Muslims. And thank you for your efforts. The latest startling information given me by someone with a good authority is this, that in December 1918, in the northern community of Petrograd, that is what they call the section of the Soviet regime under the presidency of the man known as Apfelbaum Zinoviev, out of 388 members, only 16 happened to be real Russians. With the exception of one man, a Negro from America who calls himself Professor Gordon. Yeah. I was impressed with this senator that shortly after the Great Revolution of the winter of 1917, there were scores of Jews standing on benches and soapboxes talking until their mouths frothed. And I often remarked to my sister, well, what are we coming to anyway? This all looks so Yiddish. Up to that time, we had very few Jews because there was, as you know, a restriction against having Jews in Petrograd. But after the revolution, they swarmed in there, and most of the agitators were Jews. Oh, what a surprise! I might mention this, that when the Bolsheviks came to power all over Petrograd, we at once had a predominance of Yiddish proclamations, big posters, and everything in Yiddish. It became very evident that now that was to be the one of the greatest languages in Russia, and the real Russians did not take kindly to it. A widely known French journal, L'Illustration, of September 14, 1918, commented, "When one lives in contact with the functionaries who are serving the Bolshevik government, one feature strikes the attention, which is almost all of them are Jews. I am not at all anti-Semitic. Cut it out with that saying, will you? But I must state what strikes the eye. Everywhere in Petrograd, in Moscow, in provincial districts, in commissariats, in district offices, in Smolny, in the Soviets, I have met nothing but Jews and again Jews. The more one studies the revolution, the more one is convinced that Bolshevism is a Jewish movement which can be explained by the special conditions in which the Jewish people were placed in Russia. The Overman report explains why Woodrow Wilson was so happy that the non-Russian Romanovs, intruders who had only lived in Russia for 1,000 years, had been replaced by violent overthrow of their government by Yiddish-speaking Jews from the Lower East Side of New York, but who, being Wilson's own kind, were now being hailed by the government of the United States as mass murderers who were a fit partner for the League of Honor." Now, I've heard that Wilson was a Jew, that his real name was Wohlson, W-O-H-L-S-O-N. And I think there was one more rendition of it, so... One can only conjecture whether Wilson, who had never examined for mental problems, despite his many erratic actions culminating in his final breakdown, did not long to be there with his co-religionaires, a League of Honor which pleasured itself by ripping babies out of their mother's wombs and walking knee-deep in the blood of their victims, ripping out an eye here and a tongue there, hacking off a leg or an arm, in short, trying to be impartial in dealing out Jewish justice, so-called justice, to the non-Russian autocrats, whose only fault was that they had been too stupid and too easygoing to protect their homes and families against invasions by the Jewish terrorists until it was too late. Alexander Solzhenitsyn relates that some 60 million real Russians have been murdered since the Bolshevik Revolution at the hands of the Yiddish revolutionaries. Remember, I said that they speak Yiddish, which is a hybrid language. They do not speak Hebrew. And now 200 million citizens of the United States await their turn in the abattoirs of the bloodthirsty Zionist terrorists. My God, this is a long one here. We may have to go on next week. Many of the white Russians fled toward the Pacific from the Vladivostok to the port of Daren. The Russian women, who had presided over the most gracious palaces known to the European civilization, were forced to turn to prostitution to find bread for their starving children. Others, finding the degradation unbearable, committed suicide or slowly starved to death. Decades after the Russian Revolution, some of the white Russian women could be found in houses of prostitution in Shanghai, Peking, and Tokyo. Now, I will make mention here that these Jews created this Holocaust story to cover this very information you are listening to today and were listening to last week on this show. And I must say we are going to continue on with it next week because it is very important. If you can't understand what kind of killers these people are, if you can't see the connections of the serpent people and their hatred, remember, they're the ones that call all of us haters and put in hate crime laws when they are, in fact, the haters of the world. They hate all mankind, white, black, whatever. They just use the blacks because the blacks are easily maneuvered in any direction the Jew wants to send them. Why? Because like our women, the whole black race is very susceptible to their feelings. And feelings are the most important things to these people. Money and feelings. Therefore, the Jew can use them. Don't forget that in the Weimar Republic, that they begin to bring Negroes in there to destroy the German people at that time, too. This is nothing new. These are the same techniques done over and over and over. They brought the Negroes here to America because they planned on using the Negroes throughout all of American history to destroy it. We are repeating history right now with these so-called riots, only this time they're even more fake than the first ones. The first ones, the Jews back in the 60s, where the cops would stand down and then they had to bring in the, whatever you call them there, the military, they stood down and watched them bust up all the Jewish businesses. And they knew that the American government would have to make good dollar for dollar from all that destruction. Therefore, the Jewish businesses that were deliberately destroyed by the blacks would all be brand new businesses, brand new buildings. You get the drift, right? It's like having insurance without paying for it. But you don't get insurance without paying for it, do you, dear listener? Oh, no, no. But they do, and they did. That means all the stock in their stores, and they probably lied and fluffed it way, way up and stole all kinds of more money than they deserved. Got all brand new businesses, all brand new windows, all brand new everything. Courtesy of the white people that they hate. Sound familiar? How long are we going to let this go on? These people are 2% of the population. Wake up! Would you let an army of ants run your life? I don't know. I don't know. I really don't. I don't understand. We could end this today. Worldwide, we could end it today. Well, maybe not right this moment because it's Sunday, but we could start fresh in the morning. And it would be over very, very quickly. And just think, everybody would go back to work and everybody would go back to their own countries. And I'll tell you, I grew up in white America and it was wonderful. It was wonderful. I will never forget how wonderful it was, how peaceful it was. There were hardly any cars driving around during the day because people were at work. As a child, you could play in the street. You could hear peace in the neighborhoods. You could enjoy the sunlight and listen to the birds sing. It was wonderful. I thank the Father that I at least got to experience it. I had no idea this was coming for us. To me, I just don't want to live with people that aren't of my own race. It has nothing to do with whether I hate them or not. I don't hate them. It's just not meant to be, you understand? It's not meant to be, and it's not meant for me. And it's not meant for them either. They're very unhappy, these people in this country that don't belong here. I don't want to hear any more from people that say the Southwest is these mestizos' land. Yahweh gave us this land. You take that up with Yahweh. This is our land. Why is it our land? Because Yahweh gave it to us. It is a land without walls, and it is a land of milk and honey. It is perhaps the best land on the planet. And he gave it to us. I don't care what you say, what you feel, or what you think. You take that up with Yahweh, the supreme being. Maybe you wish that the whites will all be killed. Maybe you'll find out, if you did get what you wished for, that it wasn't like you thought it was going to be after all. Be careful what you wish for. Be careful when you follow the enemies of Yahweh. Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention was, if you are a Judeo-Christian and you are going to one of these churches, and you are tithing to these churches, you are giving to God's enemies. These men are not teaching the truth. They are men of mammon. They are not serving Yahweh, the living God. They are serving mammon. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James. Until next time, study to show thyself approved.
Live, live, hip, two, three, four, hip, two, three, four, lift, lift. We're the team at EFR.
We're the team at EFR.
Make the most of what we are.
Make the most of what we are.
We love Yahweh, he's our king.
We love Yahweh, he's our king.
To his glory we now sing.
To his glory we now sing.
Hip, hip, two, three, four, hip. Hip, two, three.